So it is Friday, May 3rd, 2024. I'm Charlie Schein, and reading the front pages of the Hartford Courant of the New York Times with me today is Bill Murphy. We're going to start by taking a look at the pictures in the front page of the New York Times, and we're going to jump over to Bill and get the pictures in the front page of the Courant and our first story. So, the way it looks, a large photo on the front page of the Times, bigger than 3x5. The pristine paddock at Churchill Downs is what the photo is about. Saturday's Kentucky Derby kicks off Triple Crown season 1 year after seven horses died at the track the week of the race. And we're actually going to be taking a look at that story a little bit later on as the broadcast rolls through. And the picture itself, you've got two horses. Looks like they're in the center ring of the of Churchill Downs. They're walking around, getting a little exercise. You've got Cowboy. Actually, no, I don't know if he's Cowboy, but he's a man in a cowboy hat standing right outside looking in. And then you've got some more horses with riders on them going around the circle. As we move on down, picture from one of the protests, doesn't say where. The photo caption, Inside the Tensions at U.S. Colleges. And we're going to be taking a closer look at that story as well. Excuse me, a number of those stories. The picture itself shows a police officer walking off an arrested student. I think it's a woman, not easy to tell. Anyway, as we move on down, a forged copy of a 1822 first edition by Alexander Pushkin was found at the University of Warsaw. The story, A Tale of Geopolitics, Forgery, and Vanishing Russian Literature. The picture is of the open book. A pair of hands, you can see them holding the book open. And we're going to, like I said, actually, no, I didn't say, but I'm saying now, we'll dip into that story as the broadcast continues. A portrait artist fit for a king, Jonathan Yeo's rendering of Charles III will be unveiled at Buckingham Palace this month. And we've got a global profile. That is the first story we're going to be looking at in the international section. And then the final thumbnail photo is we are on the bottom of the front page of the Times. A rich cross-cultural mix is the title. The Frieze New York Art Fair featuring an impressive collection of painting, textiles, and collage in its booths. And it's just some photos from inside the art where you've got people looking at things and it's hard to see what they're looking at. But for now, we've looked at all the pictures in the front page of the Times. Now we're going to go over to Bill, get the pictures in the front page of the Current. Hello, Bill.
Hello, Charlie. Well, the circus is coming to town without animals, as it used to be. The Ringling Brothers Barnum & Bailey Circus will be performing here at the XL Center over the weekend, and there are three pictures on the front page of the Current. One is a picture of the Black Diamond Trio from the circus, and they are performing during a special visit Wednesday to Breakthrough North Magnet School in Hartford. And as I think that it is a trio. There are three of them, and quite an act here. One of them is holding they're all women. One is holding the other woman parallel to the ground, and on top of her head, standing on her head with one hand on top of the head is the other person. So I don't know how they do that, but anyway, they are performing. There's two other pictures that are related to the circus. Second one, a smaller one, it says the members of the Argan Dance. That's all it says, Argan Dance. I guess that's the dance group. And they are in a picture here. It looks like they are Oriental, and they are playing drums. And then there's another picture, a very small picture of a man. I guess he's a juggler. Looks like he's juggling. His name is Jan Damm, D-A-M-M, and he's performing. So they went to the school yesterday and did all those acts. Two other pictures. One is a picture of police confronting student protesters Thursday at Portland State University in Portland, Oregon. And simply the police are standing there. I can't see the protesters, but they're standing there in line. And the other picture, I'm going to read the caption. Utility analysts have said uncertainty over the regulatory climate in Connecticut has acted as a drag, lowering Eversource investment and credit ratings and making it more costly for the utility to raise capital. And the picture is simply that of the sign. It's on Selden Street in Berlin, or I guess it's Newington, the Berlin Turnpike. And the sign is in front of their on their lawn, says Eversource, 107 Selden Street. So that's it. Those are the pictures. And I'm going to go right into the first story. It is from the World and Nation section, and it is about the protests. This was from Los Angeles. Police have arrested more than 2,000 people during pro-Palestinian protests at college campuses across the United States in recent weeks, according to an Associated Press tally on Thursday. Demonstrations and arrests have occurred in almost every corner of the nation, but in the last 24 hours, they've drawn the most attention at the University of California, Los Angeles, that's UCLA, where chaotic scenes played out early Thursday when officers in riot gear surged against a crowd of demonstrators. Hundreds of protesters at UCLA defied orders to leave, some forming human chains as police fired flashbang devices to break up the crowds. At least 200 people were arrested, said Sergeant Alejandro Rubio of the California Highway Patrol, citing data from the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department. Rubio said they were being booked at the county jail's complex near downtown Los Angeles. UCLA police will determine what charges to bring. Later Thursday morning, workers removed the barricades and dismantled the protesters' fortified encampment. Bulldozers scooped up bags of trash and tents. Some buildings were covered in graffiti. As protesters call on universities to stop doing business with Israel or companies they say support the war in Gaza, tent encampments have spread across campuses nationwide in a student movement unlike any other this century. And we're going to go over to Charlie for the next story.
Commissioned to render the world's famous faces on canvas from London. Few famous Britons, it seems, can resist the chance to be painted by Jonathan Yeo. David Attenborough, the 97-year-old broadcasting legend, is among those who have recently climbed the spiral stairs to his snug studio, hidden at the end of a lane in West London, to pose for Mr. Yeo, one of Britain's most recognized portrait artists. Yet, when it came to painting his latest portrait of King Charles III, the artist had to go to the subject. Mr. Yeo rented a truck to transport his 7.5 by 5.5 foot canvas to the King's London residence, Clarence House. There, he erected a platform so he could apply the final brushstrokes to the strikingly contemporary portrait, which depicts a uniformed Charles against an ethereal background. The painting, which will be unveiled at Buckingham Palace in mid-May, is the first large-scale rendering of Charles since he became king. It will likely reconfirm Mr. Yeo's status as the go-to portraitist of his generation for Britain's great and good, as well as for actors, writers, and business people and celebrities from around the world. His privately commissioned works can fetch around $500,000 each. Painting the king's portrait also marks a return to normalcy for Mr. Yeo, 53, who suffered a near-fatal heart attack last year that he attributes to the lingering effects of cancer in his early 20s. The parallel with his subject is not lost on him. Charles, 75, announced in February that he'd been diagnosed with cancer just 18 months into his reign. Mr. Yeo said he did not learn of the king's illness until after he'd completed the painting. If anything, his depiction is of a vigorous, commanding monarch. But it gave Mr. Yeo deeper empathy for the man he got to know over four sittings, beginning in June 2021, when Charles was still Prince of Wales, and continuing after the death of his mother, Queen Elizabeth II, and his coronation last May. You see physical changes in people depending on how things are going, Mr. Yeo said in his studio, where he'd decorously turned the still-unveiled painting away from the gaze of curious visitors. Age and experience were suiting him, he said. His demeanor definitely changed after he became king. The portrait was commissioned by the Worshipful Company of Drapers, a medieval guild of wood and cloth merchants that is now a philanthropy. It will hang in Drapers Hall, the company's baronial quarters in London's financial district, which has a gallery of monarchs from King George III to Queen Victoria. Mr. Yeo's Charles will add a contemporary jolt to that classical lineup, Bill.
Thank you, Charlie. Another story from the World and Nation section of The Current from Beirut. Hamas said Thursday that it is sending a delegation to Egypt for further ceasefire talks in a new sign of progress in attempts by international mediators to hammer out an agreement between Israel and the terrorist group to end the war in Gaza. After months of stop-and-start negotiations, the ceasefire efforts appear to have reached a critical stage, with Egyptian and American mediators reporting signs of compromise in recent days. But chances for the deal remain entangled, with the key question of whether Israel will accept an end to the war without reaching its stated goal of destroying Hamas. The stakes in the ceasefire negotiations were made clear in a new UN report that said if the Israel-Hamas war stops today, it will still take until 2040 to rebuild all the homes that have been destroyed by nearly 7 months of Israeli bombardment and ground offenses in Gaza. It warned that the impact of the damage to the economy will set back development for generations and will get worse with every month fighting continues. The proposal that U.S. and Egyptian mediators have put to Hamas, apparently with Israel's acceptance, sets out a three-stage process that would bring an immediate six-week ceasefire and partial release of Israeli hostages, but also negotiations over a permanent calm that includes some sort of Israeli withdrawal from Gaza, according to an Egyptian official. Hamas is seeking guarantees for a full Israeli withdrawal and complete end to the war. Hamas officials have sent mixed signals about the proposal in recent days, but Thursday its supreme leader, Ismail Haniyeh, said in a statement that he had spoken to Egypt's intelligence chief and stressed the positive spirit of the movement in studying the ceasefire proposal. That was a quote. The statement said Hamas negotiators would travel to Cairo to complete the ongoing discussions with the aim of working forward for an agreement. Haniyeh said that he had also spoken to the prime minister of Qatar, another key mediator in the process. The brokers are hopeful that the deal will bring an end to a conflict that has killed more than 34,000 Palestinians, according to local health officials, caused widespread destruction, and plunged the territory into a humanitarian crisis. If Israel does agree to end the war in return for a full hostage release, it would be a major turnaround since Hamas's October 7th attack stunned Israel. Its leaders have vowed not to stop their bombardment and ground offensive until the militant group is destroyed. Charlie?
Conservative Party in Britain asked, how much worse can it get? From London. When voters in England and Wales go to the polls on Thursday to elect mayors and local council members, the outcome will inevitably be seen as a barometer for Britain's coming general election. Given the sour public mood and the Conservative Party's dire poll ratings, the storm clouds are already forming. The big question is not whether the governing Conservatives will lose seats. That is a foregone conclusion among pollsters. But whether the losses will exceed or fall short of expectations after 18 months in which the Tories have consistently trailed the opposition Labour Party by yawning margins. If a party has been 20 points behind the opposition for 18 months, how much worse can it get? Said Tony Travers, a professor of politics at the London School of Economics. The losses would have to be very, very bad for it to be viewed as a negative result for the Conservatives, and they are unlikely to be good enough for Labour for it to be viewed as a success. The magic number, Professor Travers said, is 500 council seats. If the Conservatives, who were defending 985 seats in England, can hold their losses to below 500 seats, he said, the party faithful will probably accept it as a bruising but bearable setback. If Labour, which is defending 965 seats, and other parties grab more than 500 Tory seats, that could set off a fresh spasm of panic in the governing party's ranks, even putting Prime Minister Rishi Sunak's job in jeopardy. Professor Travers conceded that the 500-seat benchmark was arbitrary, a conceit of academics rather than a concrete measure of either party's standing with the electorate. But in a local election, especially one so soon before a general election, maybe intangible factors like momentum and mood are important. By most accounts, the public's mood remains dour and its anti-incumbent fervor fierce. Conservatives are struggling with the same problems that have weighed them down for more than a year: a cost of living squeeze, stagnating economy, rising mortgage rates, and a crisis in the National Health Service. With a few exceptions, the Conservatives, who have held power at the national level for 14 years, have been swept out of parliamentary seats in a recent special elections held to fill vacancies. In a general election, in which Mr. Sunak could call within weeks but is more likely to call in the autumn, polls are predicting a Labour landslide that could rival that of Tony Blair's Labour Party in 1997. In the last local elections held a year ago, the Conservatives lost more than 1,000 seats, a string of defeats across the country that dramatized the party's problems and raised questions about Mr. Sunak, who had stabilized Britain's economy after the turbulent 44-day tenure of his predecessor, Liz Truss. Little has gone well for him since then. While inflation has ebbed, Britain's economy remains stalled, and thousands of Britons are being jolted by higher mortgage rates. Fear of a looming election defeat has divided the party into feuding camps, with ambitious would-be leaders vying to replace Mr. Sunak if he's forced out. "They're fighting like rats in a sack," said Timothy Bale, a professor of politics at Queen Mary University in London. "They're pursuing a culture war politics that has little appeal to an increasingly tolerant electorate." Bill.
Annapolis, Maryland. Maryland plans to rebuild the Francis Scott Key Bridge in just over 4 years at an estimated cost of $1.7 billion to $1.9 billion, a state transportation official said on Thursday. As salvage efforts continue, authorities also announced late Wednesday they had recovered the body of a fifth person who died in the March 26 collapse. The state plans to build a new span by fall 2028, said David Broughton, a spokesman for the Maryland Department of Transportation. He said the cost estimate is preliminary and detailed engineering specifics have not been confirmed. Late Wednesday, authorities announced they recovered the body of a fifth person who was missing after the collapse of the bridge more than a month ago, shutting down the Port of Baltimore, one of the busiest ports in the country. Six members of a roadwork crew plunged to their deaths on March 26 when a container ship lost power and crashed into one of the bridge's supporting columns. The Key Bridge Response Unified Command announced that the victim found Wednesday was identified as Miguel Angel Luna Gonzalez, 49, of Glen Burnie, Maryland. All the victims were Latino immigrants who came to the United States from Mexico, Guatemala, El Salvador, or Honduras. "We continue to pray for Miguel Angel Luna Gonzalez, his family, and all those who love him, acknowledging the anguish they have experienced since the Key Bridge collapse," Governor Wes Moore said in a statement Thursday. "We pray for comfort. We pray for the healing. We pray for peace in knowing that their loved one has finally come home."